So, welcome everybody. Week 3 of our look at Mishlei. We've tried to outline the book, we've talked about its message, and now I want to ask a question which goes back to some of the introductory questions we had week 1 about the nature of the book. Specifically, is Mishlei a holy book? Now, we have to define what holy means, right? I knew you were going to ask me that, Vanessa. But before we do that, actually, remember, I did want to go back to one point, the question that Susan asked last time about the elitism of the book and its trust in wisdom, like those who are wise will be righteous and those who are not wise will not. So I just wanted to point out to you the sources in sources 1 and 2. These are two passages of Gemara, which we saw when we studied Melachim last year, when we learned about Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, and specifically when we got to Melachim, I should say, chapter 11, right, which was where we saw Shlomo being drawn after his wives are idolatrous, he allows the construction of altars for idolatry. And we were just shocked, like, how did Shlomo end up there? And we brought these two passages of Gemara, number 1 and number 2. If you take a look at them quickly, the one in Sanhedrin, Ksiv lo yarba lo nashin. The Torah says, in Devarim chapter 17, where it gives us the laws of kings, it says he should not have too many wives. How many is too many? Its own discussion. Omar Shlomo, ani arbe velo asur. Shlomo says, I'm going to have many, and I will not deviate. I won't be led astray. And sure enough, vayihi le'zikna Shlomo nashabi tuas levavo. As he got older, his wives turned his heart. It also says, lo yarba lo susim. He's not supposed to have too many horses, right? Lest he go back to Egypt to try to get horses. Ve'amar Shlomo, ani arbe velo ashiv. And Shlomo says, I'm going to have many wives, and I will not go back to Egypt. Uchsiv, vateitze merkavami, mitzrayim, mitzesh, etc. And sure enough, chariots came from Egypt. He went back to Egypt to get horses. That's passage number 1. Passage number 2 is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which points to a verse in Kohelet, in Ecclesiastes. Mani mekayin bikesh Kohelet limso divrei chepetz. What does it mean when, in the summary at the end of the book, it says Kohelet, which we understand to refer to Shlomo, more about that when we learn Kohelet at the end of this year, but Kohelet sought to find Divrei Chefetz, desirable words, words of desire. What does that mean? Bikesh Kohelet lidon dinin shebalev shelo be'edim v'shelo bahasra. It means that Shlomo, Kohelet, wanted to judge cases in his heart. Without witnesses, without a warning, right? If you think about the story with the two zonot from Melachim Aleph, right? Which we saw last year, where there are no witnesses, there's no nothing, he's just, you know, decided this is the way to determine who's right and who's wrong, the business with the sword. We spent a lot of time discussing that last year. So he wants to be able to judge cases without following protocol. And a small voice emerges and says to him the rest of that verse. V'chasov yosher divrei emes. That which is recorded straight, words of truth. What does that mean? It means what's written in the Torah about the protocol for judging cases is true. Al pishnayim edim v'gomer. You yield with two witnesses, you have a protocol to follow. And the common denominator between the two stories is that in each case, the Torah sets out rules for your protection, to make sure you do things right, and Shlomo thinks he's smarter. Shlomo thinks that his wisdom is going to carry the day. So when we talk about this book of Mishlei and its confidence that wisdom is what's going to lead you in the right direction, and apparently that's a requirement in order to be good, and if you are right, if you're wise, you will become righteous and good. Like, how do we understand that? So we gave certain answers last week. We pointed out regarding people who are not necessarily intellectually gifted, they can learn goodness in any case, right, by shimush, by apprenticing themselves to those who are good. We pointed that out. We also pointed out that in terms of the idea that those who grow intellectually will become righteous, we also have the warning for people who seek intellect in the wrong directions and end up in trouble. But I think the fundamental point is, and I said that briefly last week, I'm just expanding it now, this is Shlomo's book. And Shlomo is all about the wisdom that God gave him. That's what he believes in. That's where his confidence is. It doesn't work out so well for him in the end. As these two passages of Gemara show, based on the story in chapter 11, Malachim. It's also going to be reflected in a Medrash that we're going to see in a little bit. By putting this in Tanakh, by putting Mishle in Tanakh, Chazal clearly feel that there is a lot to be said about acquiring Chachma, acquiring wisdom, and having it lead to righteousness. However, they also emphasize Yiras Hashem. You have to pursue awe of God because they are aware of the pitfalls of the path of pursuing wisdom. They understand that wisdom doesn't cure all your problems. They recognize that it doesn't guarantee anything. But that's just, you know, a little bit of an expansion on the questions that that Susan asked last time. Clear? Okay. So going back to the question of whether Mishle is holy. So I am using the word holy to mean that it reflects divine wisdom. It's not just, you know, what people decided is wise. That's my question. Is this book somehow reflective of Hashem's messages, or is it just, here's some good advice? You could open up Poor Richard's Almanac, right, from Ben Franklin, or you could open up, I don't know, Shakespeare and some speech, right, neither a borrower nor a lender be, and so on. Or you could open up Mishle. The question matters a great deal in terms of the level of respect we're going to accord to the book's counsel, and how hard we're going to work to analyze it. You know, I don't have any mitzvah of analyzing Poor Richard's Almanac. I can take it at face value. I could ignore it. Is this meant to be something more than that? That's the question that I'm starting out with. Yes, Ricky.
To me, holy also means, and you alluded to that a couple of seconds ago, also means something that has to be revered.
Yeah.
And you said respected.
Yeah.
Something that has to be treated in a different way than everything.
Yeah. No, my goal is not to provide an overarching explanation of what holiness is. I'm using the word holy here as shorthand for written by God and therefore deserving of respect and analysis and so on. That's what I mean. There's way more that you could say about defining holiness than we are ever going to get to. We could take all 11 weeks that we have for Mishle and discuss holiness and we still wouldn't get to the bottom of it. So, yeah, Dahlia.
I just wanted to say that don't we have a different attitude towards the homage than we do towards the Niyamim Ketuvim?
Yes.
There is definitely holiness to the five, you know, to the homage.
Yes.
But there, I mean, the Shoftim isn't holy. So
of course it is.
Be holy?
Of course it's holy. Why wouldn't Shoftim be holy?
Well, I mean, holy in the sense that it was not written by God.
But wait, okay. What I want to avoid is getting sidetracked onto a completely different point. The question is not how did Shlomo or Chizkiyahu or any of them end up with this text? Was it dictated word for word? Was it Nevuah? Was it Ruach HaKodesh? That's beside the point. The fact that we are taught that Chumash is dictated, whereas Nevi'im is Hashem sending messages less directly or more directly to prophets, and the prophets interpreting, putting in their own words or whatever, is all valid. It's just not, it's, my question is not, did Shlomo have God dictating to him on a mountaintop? Or did Shlomo get nevuah? Or did Shlomo get divine inspiration? My question is, when this book says to me, and open up any particular passage that you want, gives me, you know, the, I opened up a random one. Yaser bincha v'yinichecha v'yitein madanim l'nafshecha. If you rebuke your son, if you instruct your son, then he will leave you be. And he will give pleasure, or he will give delicacies to your spirit. Is that God? Is that a divine message, or is that just common sense? Like, you know, tell your kid what to do, and if you let them be their own devices, it's not gonna end well. That's all I'm asking. I'm not getting into the hierarchy of different kinds of prophecy. That's what I'm saying. Clear?
Not really.
No? What's not clear about it?
What's not clear to me is why any of Nevi'im and Ketuvim are holy in the way that Chumash is holy.
Who said the same as Chumash? I'm not saying it's the same as Chumash.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me that only Chumash can consider to be holy.
Again, I don't get stuck on the word holy. Get stuck on the question of is it from God?
I'm having a really big problem with that word. Yeah.
So it, strike the word if you want. It's just a really convenient shorthand instead of having to say divinely provided wisdom that we treat with respect and we analyze in depth. That's all I'm trying to do. That's all. Really. Innocent. Moish, please tell me you're not talking about holiness.
No, I'm going to ask you a question. Nobody knows what holiness means, so forget about that. But I think this book is extraordinarily holy, because what is clear is that it is not taking, let's say, divine-inspired thoughts. It is taking thoughts that, without there being divinely inspired, nevertheless, we accept them as holy because they are part of our canon. And therefore, it says to everybody that there's things that can come in to our canon and be treated as holy.
So there is something to be said for what you're saying, in the sense of respecting that which is from a human being, whether it gets into the canon or doesn't get into the canon. Having said that, there's a lesson in this for me about using a word that I know is a loaded word. Because I have just, lost 10 minutes of our shiur on something that a distraction of my own creation. Let's get back into the question of, did this come from God in whatever means or not? And we're going to see, unsurprisingly, multiple views. The first view is, yes, of course this is from God. First and foremost, because Shlomo is the author. How do you know that Shlomo is the author? Because the book says so, explicitly, multiple times. You know, this isn't like the game that you play in Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim of Shlomo or to Shlomo. And it mentions Shlomo sometimes. Or the game that you play in Koheles. Well, it says Koheles. Is Koheles Shlomo? Well, who else is the son of David who's king in Jerusalem other than Shlomo? It must be Koheles or Shlomo. This isn't like that, right? We spent a little bit of time, week one or week two, I forget, actually both, looking at the opening verse in the book, right? The book started out by saying, Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. This book says, my author is Solomon, the Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, right? I feel like Yaakov talking to Lavan, Rachel, your daughter, your younger daughter. It's very, very clear, and it isn't only there. It showed up three times in the book, right? It was in the beginning of chapter 1, it was in the beginning of chapter 10. It's three times in the book that it says, this is from Shlomo. Not only that, elsewhere in a Tanakh, we are told that Shlomo authored thousands of mishalim, thousands of these, whatever you want to call them, literary lessons, parables, proverbs, or whatever, right? If you were to take a look in Malachim Aleph, Kings 1, chapter 5, sentence 12, right? We saw it last year. I gave you the reference there in the heading of source number 3 for those who want to see the number again. It says, Vayidaber shloshes alafim mashal. He spoke 3,000 mashal, 3,000 of these parables. Not only that, in Koheles, chapter 12, sentence 9, part of that summary of the book that appears at the end of the book, we are told, V'yoser shaya Koheles chacham, more than Koheles was wise, Oli madaz es ha'am, he taught knowledge to the nation, V'izein v'chiker tikein mishalim harbei. He prepared many mishalim. So, my starting point is, it's Shlomo. Now, you have to ask yourself, if there are 3,000 parables, where are they? Because this book, which is a long book, has 915 verses. How do you get 3,000 parables in 915 verses? So we discussed that, actually, back when we learned Malachim last year, and there we talked about it at greater length, but basically we either suggested that when it says Shloshes Elef, or I think that was the wording, 3 Elef. Elef can mean lesson, right? Aleph is to teach. Rashi said that, Malbim said that, so that was one answer. Another answer was that no, Elef means thousand, and if you take a look on your sheet in source number 3, I gave you the references for different approaches to explain what happened to the 3,000, Radak simply said, we lost them. Sorry. We got 915, that's not so bad. But we forgot some of them, sorry. Ralbag's answer is to say, you know, not all of them are gonna be the best. Some Mishalim are better than others. So the 915 were the ones that made the cut to make it into Mishlei Shlomo. The same way, I think it was Ralbag who said it, when we learned Shir HaShirim, right? It said, Shir HaShirim Asher LeShlomo, it's the song of all songs. He had lots of songs. These are the best. That's what made it into Shir HaShirim. And then we had another idea found in the Medrash Tanchuma that there are layers in each verse here, and that's how you get to your 3,000 Mishalim. Either way, this is claiming, the book itself is claiming to be Shlomo, and other texts in Tanakh support the idea that it is Shlomo, and adding to that, there are those who look at the language and see evidence of Shlomo's era based on analogies in other Semitic languages from his time. But in the interest of intellectual honesty, I am not going to go into that. And my reason for that is because if someone were to tell me they looked at other ancient Semitic languages and found evidence that it was not written in Shlomo's time, I would ignore that and find some other way to explain it away. So I can't really now rely on the ancient Semitic languages to prove my point when it happens to support me. Either you accept it, and you have to be willing to accept the ramifications of that, or you don't accept it. In which case, you know, be honest and don't use it as a support for yourself when it's convenient. So I'm just ignoring the ancient Semitic language support for Shlomo's era. But that's number one. The Tanakh itself thinks so. And remember that if we're talking about Shlomo as the author, Shlomo's wisdom is granted by God. Right, that's explicit in the third chapter in Malachim, where God says to Shlomo, ask me for something I will give you. And he asks to be able to judge the people, right? He wants to be able to handle their cases and to lead them well. And Hashem says, I'm going to give you all the things, even the things you didn't ask for. And he says, I'm going to make you wise, wiser than anybody. And if you take a look in source number 4, just a refresher of a couple of points that Abarbanel made regarding that wisdom that Shlomo received. I'm just going to read out my English translation in the interests of time. He has several gates, several sha'arim, in his comments on Shlomo's wisdom. The first gate There is no doubt that Solomon's grasp and his type of knowledge were different from the kind of grasp of philosophers and their means of knowing. What Shlomo got was not the same thing as what philosophers in general get. Their grasp is natural, based on human analysis and thought. Solomon's grasp was miraculous by the good hand of God upon him. So that's number one. His wisdom, his knowledge does not come to him in the way that human beings normally attain knowledge. It's given to him from God. The second gate is that just as Solomon's wisdom was distinguished from the wisdom of philosophers because of his manner of grasping it and knowing it, so it was distinguished in terms of that which he knew and grasped, which they did not achieve with all the wisdoms of analysis that preceded and followed him. It was substantively different. It wasn't just that his method of learning was different, but what he actually got was different and was not vulnerable to the same errors and flaws and weaknesses that befall other people. I see your hand, Susan, but I'm going to ask you to wait, please. I'm not ready for comments and questions yet. We have quite a bit to do first. So Shlomo's wisdom is supposed to be something given to him by God, and that is supposed to be what leads to his writing of his books. When we learned Shir HaShirim earlier this year, we talked about when he wrote each of his books, Shir HaShirim, Mishlei Koheles. There was even a suggestion that he wrote them all at once after he gained that wisdom from God. So this is supposed to be a product of the wisdom that Hashem gave to Shlomo. Now, going back to Dalia's question, does that mean that he's given this word for word? No, that's not what it's necessarily saying. But it is a product of the lessons that he is gaining from Hashem as wisdom. And this is supposed to be not just wisdom, but special wisdom. And here I'm going to ask you to open up your Tanakh to Malachim Aleph. If you take a look at source number 5, I gave you particular references there that I think are very, very important for where we're going in this conversation. Malachim Aleph, Kings 1, Chapter 3, Sentence 12. When Hashem initially gives Shlomo wisdom. Give people a moment to flip pages. Hashem says, Hine asisi chidvarecha. I have done as you said. When you said you wanted to be able to judge cases, I'm giving you that wisdom. Hine nasati lecha lev chacham v'navon. I have given you a heart that is wise and understanding. Asher kamocha lo haya lefanecha. There has been no one like you before. V'acharecha lo yakum kamocha. And there ain't going to be afterwards either. We discussed last year whether that really means no one is ever going to be Shlomo's match. What does that really mean? Does that mean in his generation? Does that mean with this kind of wisdom, in this arena of wisdom? I don't want to reopen it. My point right now is to say he is considered to be superlative. That's number one. And then we get more. We get specific comparisons. As you jump to chapter 5, sentence 10, when it's talking about Shlomo's great wisdom, Vaterev chochmas Shlomo mechachmas kol b'nei kedem u'mikol chochmas Mitzrayim. Shlomo's wisdom is greater than the wisdom of all of the people of the East, as well as all of the wisdom of Egypt. Keep in mind the Egypt reference. That's going to matter. Not only that, though, jump ahead now to chapter 10, still in Malachim Aleph, still in Kings 1. The story in the beginning of chapter 10, you remember this story, the story of the Queen of Sheba, right? The Queen of Sheba heard how wondrous Shlomo was, and she came to test him with riddles, right? She heard, Shema Shlomo l'shem Hashem, Shlomo's greatness in the name of God. And she came to Yerushalayim. I'm just going to paraphrase quickly. She brings camels. She's got spices. She has gold. She has gems. And she comes to him and speaks to him everything in her heart. And Shlomo tells her all of her matters. Nothing is hidden from the king. He tells her everything. And she sees his wisdom. And she sees his house. And she sees his table. And she sees the servants. And she's like, whoa, this is very, very impressive. I didn't believe it until I actually saw it. Look what you have. Look at all of your wisdom. Shlomo is supposed to be the height of wisdom. King Hiram, by the way, also admired his wisdom, but not, it's not described in all the detail that we use with the Queen of Sheba. So, number one is this book is going to be considered the great wisdom that Hashem provided Shlomo. Now, when we get to view number two, which is the view that no, this isn't God's wisdom, we will see those who challenge Shlomo's authorship. So I'm not, right now I'm not dealing with the opposition. The opposition is coming. Just be patient. The opposition is always around the corner. But right now we see the positive view. Adding to the pedigree of this book is what we saw in chapter 25, sentence 1, where we were told that this was from, assembled by, I should say, Chizkiyahu's men. If you take a look at chapter 25, sentence 1, in Mishle now, we're out of Malachim. Gam Elem Mishle Shlomo. These are also the Mishalim of Shlomo. Asher He'tiku Anshei Chizkiyah Melech Yehuda. Which I'm going to translate for now as, which were copied by the men of Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda. I say the men of, we're going to come back to, I'm sorry, I say the copied by, but we're going to come back to that term. If you take a look on your sheet, we're flipping a lot of different sources now, but we can do it. Source number 6, the Gemara in Bava Basra says, Chizkiyah v'sayato kasvu Yeshaya Mishle Shir Hashirim v'Koheles. Chizkiyahu and his crew are credited with writing Yeshaya Mishle Shir Hashirim and Koheles. So all three of Shlomo's books plus Yeshaya, Isaiah. Now Chizkiyahu and Shlomo have a special bond, even though they're separated by more than 200 years. Tanakh explicitly connects Chizkiyahu with Shlomo. I didn't bring you the reference on the sheet because I felt like it was too much. But in Divrei Hayamim Bet, chapter 30, it compares Chizkiyahu's Pesach, his Pesach celebration with the nation, with Shlomo's Pesach celebration. I believe the only other king to be compared to Shlomo in Tanakh is Yoshiyahu. And Yoshiyahu has his own links to Shlomo, which are worthy of their own discussion. When Shlomo restores the Beis HaMikdash, and it's like what Shlomo did in building it, Divrei Hayamim Bet, chapter 35, for those who want to look that up. But Chizkiyahu has a bond with Shlomo, and Chizkiyahu has a bond with learning. Because in Yeshayahu, chapters like 29, 30, 31 or so, there's a whole thing about how the Jews are ignorant and they ignore what the prophets have to say and they will not learn. And then Yeshaya chapter 32 predicts the arrival of Chizkiyahu as king. And it specifically talks about him teaching the people. If you wanted to look in Yeshaya chapter 32 sentence 4, we're not going to do it now. It talks about Chizkiyahu teaching the people as part of rehabilitating them. You also have a reference in Yeshayahu chapter 10 about Sanherib, the Assyrian king, his yoke being destroyed by Chizkiyahu's oil, which the Gemara says is the oil of the lamps that they use to illuminate for Torah study. Chizkiyahu is considered to be, number one, associated with Shlomo on some level, and number two, aside from being his, you know, great-great-grandson, and number two, he has a special bond with learning that I think you're seeing expressed when we say here that Chizkiyahu's men are the ones who write down and promote these Mishalim. Now, who are his group? Anshei Chizkiyahu, who is that? So the simple answer is, and Rabbeinu Gershom says it, Rabbeinu Gershom being the Rebbe of the Rebbeim of Rashi, he says, it's the students, it's Chizkiyahu's students. Tosfos commenting on the Gemara says, it has to be his students and not Chizkiyahu, because Yeshayahu outlives Chizkiyahu. Yeshayahu is still king in the time of Menashe, who is after Chizkiyahu. right? Chizkiyahu's son is Menashe. So the Satosva says it has to be that that it's not Chizkiyahu who's doing it, but it's his students who are doing it. There's even, I saw somewhere in the Ben Yehoshua commenting on Avos Rabbi Nasan that Chizkiyahu's group becomes the nucleus of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, in the beginning of the Second Beis HaMikdash. I find that difficult, because in between Chizkiyahu's time and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, you have, you know, a couple of hundred years, not to mention the Babylonian exile. Like, I don't know. I find that difficult. Nonetheless, this is the group that is credited with doing something. He'etiku is the word that's used in the text. So now I'm going to come back to you and ask you, anyone here with a Mishle that has English, how does your edition translate 25.1, specifically that verb? What was it that Chizkiyahu's group did? Yes, Susan. You're muted.
Verb 25.1.
I gave it to the Lord, for I have walked. No, Mishle 25. You're in Tehillim.
Oh, I'm sorry, I read one up. Sorry.
Yeah.
I have.
Okay.
You, my God,
you're in Tehillim. You're not in Mishle.
No.
So I have a translation. Okay. These are the proverbs of Shlomo
that were copied, which specifically as
and copied.
Hang on. I can't hear everybody at once. Joyce, what's your verb?
These also are the proverbs of the Shlomo, which men of Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda, copied out.
Dalia has copied out. I saw in the chat that Leah has maintained. That's a funny word. Okay.
I have the Quran from Sat.
Yeah.
These two are among the proverbs of Shlomo. They were transcribed by...
Okay, so the Quran has transcribed. Anyone have anything other than copied, maintained, and transcribed? Okay, we think we've covered our bases. I don't know what maintained is, but I'll tell you this. The Meiri is of the view, and I believe Rav Sadja Gaon as well, that the answer really is copied over. These were lessons that have been transmitted verbally, and now they are writing them down, which fits with transcribed, obviously, also. So if your Tanakh says transcribed, like, don't get rid of it, that's fine. If you take a look at source number 7, I'm not ready for comments yet. If you take a look at source number 7, I brought you the Meiri. He says, this is courtesy of the website Mikra'o Gedolo Keter. Ba'ahena milas gam, it says these are also the words, the proverbs of Shlomo. Lahoros sha'ava pisha anshe chizkiya hayu ma'atikim, to teach that even though Chizkiyahu's men were the ones who copied it over, Aval HaMechaber Haya Shlomo, but the author is still Shlomo Solomon. V'nira Shlo Nichtivu Dvarav B'Sefer Zeh Adarosh HaChizkiyah, but it wasn't written down until Chizkiyahu's generation. Shaisa Ben Chochma Yisera, they had great wisdom. V'yazdu Kamed Dvarim, they established many things. There are a lot of accomplishments in Chizkiyahu's day. Umatsu Devarim Elu B'Megilos Mechoch Maso Shel Shlomo. They found his words in scrolls. So apparently they had been written, but they weren't published at any rate. Ve'etikum v'chibrum m'sha'ar Devarav Anichbadim. They copied them and compiled them along with his other honored words, which were earlier in this book. So we have the first 24 chapters that are getting to us from somebody earlier than Chizkiyahu. And then Chizkiyahu's group say, you know, we have these also, we should also write these down. That's the mainstream view of what He'etiku means. However, the Da'at Mikra edition quotes from Rabbi Avram Gavishon. And I need to introduce Rabbi Avram Gavishon because it's not a name that's going to be familiar to most people, including me, until I started teaching Mishle. So Rav Avraham Gavishon was actually born in Algeria in 1543. His family had fled the expulsion from Spain. He became a doctor. He actually treated the king of Algeria at some point. And he wrote a commentary. I'm just going to mute people because I'm getting background noise. My hallway noise is enough background noise for me. So he wrote a commentary on Mishlei that was not published in his lifetime. But sometime afterwards, it was published by someone who felt that Rabbi Gavishon had been forgotten. And so they titled the work Omer HaShechecha. Omer with an ayin is a sheaf, like sheaves of grain. Shechecha is the grain that you forget when you're harvesting, and therefore you have to leave it for the needy. So this is the sheaf of that which had been forgotten. And when Rabbi Gavishon makes comments, he starts with the Meiri, and then he gives you his own take. That's what happens when you go through it, and you can find it on Hebrew Books. Hebrewbooks.org/6238 is where you can find this. So he gives a very interesting idea, and he gives you enough material here to give you nightmares, potentially, depending on whether you like or don't like what he has to say. Take a look at number 8. I thought it worthwhile enough that I copied it over and translated it here. You'll see that I added in the word illegible in a couple of places, because there are some places where the manuscript is just so poor that I just can't make out what he's saying, but it doesn't affect the substance of what he wrote. He says, I'm reading my translation, and one could say that this ha'ataka, the verb that's used, ha'atiku, could mean they transported it. Laha'atik is to go, to travel, like vaya'atek misham, if those who are familiar. Vaya'atek misham ha'hara is a term that's used when Abraham travels. So the term here is to make the words of Shlomo travel. They transported it from a language to our holy language, because he interacted with them, meaning with these Mishalim, with non-Jewish sages and their kings. Shlomo is having conversations with non-Jewish sages and with non-Jewish kings, and he's speaking in their tongue. And he gives you an example. Like Pythagoras the Egyptian, about whom the earlier ones said that they saw in his books that he was in the time of King Solomon. And he went and greeted him and saw the Levites playing music, and he took from them introductory principles for the wisdom of music, and he saw wonders. And all of this is in the book Derech HaSeichel that my father wrote, which is a nice plug. But in terms of the Pythagoras piece of it, you know that a lot of Pythagoras' work is not about the triangle, the Pythagorean theorem. It's about the theory of music and the interconnection of music and mathematics. So there is an idea out there already in medieval times that he got his stuff, Pythagoras got his stuff from Shlomo. Interestingly, the earliest source I can find for that idea is not a Jewish source. It was in medieval Islam. Remember that they considered Shlomo a prophet. So they said that Pythagoras got his wisdom from Shlomo. Now, it certainly would not have been direct, because Pythagoras is about 400 years or so after Shlomo. Pythagoras is 6th century before the Common Era. I double-checked that on Wikipedia, so now I know it's true. The Shlomo is well before him. Nonetheless, it's a fascinating statement. The point isn't that. His point, rather, is to say Shlomo composes his parables for non-Jewish kings and sages in their language. And he keeps on going. And like the Queen of Sheba and the answer to her riddles, which we read about, it appears more likely that he spoke with her in her language, not in Hebrew. And Lemuel and Agur ben Yake and Itiel and Ukal, these are names that we're going to have to look at that come up later on in Mishlei. We have not seen their names mentioned elsewhere with Solomon's sages and officers in Malachim or Divrei HaYamim. These names are foreign names that don't show up in general in this book. The simple meaning is that they were non-Jewish sages. And they came to him to hear and learn his wisdom. Certainly he only explained it to them in the language they understood. So that's the idea. So he says, the idea here is that Chizkiyahu's men have to translate them. And therefore they, these lessons from here on out, are deeper than the earlier lessons, which were not translated. They were straight Hebrew. And so explained Rabbi Yosef. I don't know if he means Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi or somebody else. But the something of Solomon were deep because that which is transported from language to language is deep. It's hard to understand. And in the words, and by the way, some of you may remember when we learned Eov, Ibn Ezra claimed that Eov is hard to understand because it was translated. He said the book of Eov wasn't originally written in Hebrew. So same idea, that which is translated is harder to understand. And in the words of the commentators, it is not ha'ataka as implied from language to language, but ha'ataka is writing. That's the idea that we've already seen, that it was copied over or transcribed. They brought these mishalim to compose them together because they were compiled by one person. So Chizkiyah and his men put them all together with Shlomo's other proverbs. So in sum, the basic view is Chizkiyahu's group is transcribing or copying or merging together Shlomo's parables. However, you have this other view of Rabbi Gavishon, who claims that it's actually being translated into Hebrew. And then you have one more view, and that's found in the Medrash and Avos Rabbi Nasan in source number 9. The Mishnah in the beginning of Pirkei Avos says, among other pieces of advice, Hevu misunim badin, be patient in judging. When you judge cases, you have to be patient. So this Avos Rabbi Nasan, which is an expansion of lessons in Pirkei Avot, says, Hevu misunim badin, be patient in judgment. Ketzad, how so? Malamitche odam mamtin badin. This teaches that one should be patient in judgment. Shekala mamtin badin meyushav badin. Anyone who is patient in judgment is settled in judgment. Meaning, you can think. Don't rush. Don't be hasty. Don't let them rush you. And then they quote our verse here. These are also the Mishalim of Solomon, which the men of Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda, he'etiku. And it says, lo she'etiku ela she'imtinu. Not that they copied them, but they were patient with them. And Abba Shaul says, not that they were patient with them, ela she'pirshu, they explained them. Meaning what? Barishona hayu omer mishle v'shirashirim v'kohelas ginuzim hayu. Originally, mishle, shirashirim, and kohelas were not considered to be part of Tanakh. They weren't part of holy writing. Oh, there's that word again. They weren't something for people to study and learn. Shema yu omer mishalos veina menaksuvim, because these are just nice proverbs. They're not part of the writings with a capital W. Va'amdu v'gunzu osam achebo anche knes tagadolu pirshu osam, until the great assembly came and they explained them. Now that's the great assembly. That's not Chizkiyahu's group. There's more to be said about this business of whether it was supposed to be in Tanakh or not. I don't want to get sidetracked on that right now. The bottom line is, we ascribe the book to Shlomo, certainly the first 24 chapters directly. Starting with 25, we have Chizkiyahu's group doing it, and our sages consistently viewed it as Shlomo's book with wisdom that comes from God, and they canonized it in Tanakh. I've been monologuing a lot. Thank you for your patience. Okay, I'm going to pause here. We still have to ask the question, then what about the names Agur ben Yaka and Lemuel and Itiel and Ukal, which we're going to see. But let me just pause here and take questions and comments. Susan, you've been waiting. Thank you.
My question is, we know that the wisdom of Shlomo got him into more trouble than it was good at the end.
Well, I don't know if it did a lot of good until it went bad. But go ahead.
Yeah,
it got him into trouble.
Okay. Got him into trouble. Yet, we're admiring all this wisdom. How do we reconcile what the wisdom did to him?
So, that's a bigger picture question than the question of, is this book his or is this book from God? So, I'm not going to answer it right now, except to point you to one of the comments I made in the beginning of the class today, which is, there's a lot of effort in this book to warn people about Yiras Hashem and to say you need reverence for God even before you have wisdom. That is our response to Shlomo. There's more to say, but I'm going to hold off on it for now. Other questions and comments? Dahlia and then Gita.
So I'm just wondering, we originally started out this conversation with that there were over 3,000 Mishalim, and now we're down to 915. Don't you think there was an editing process? Maybe because of the lifestyle that Shlomo lived.
No, I mean, you're with Ralbag. You're quoting Ralbag, right? Ralbag said not all of them were worthy to be in this book.
Right, well, but I mean, but that's very clear when he says that they copied. They copied only, there was an editing process. Well, that's right here. It's not just Ralbag's theory. And to me, it's clear that it's saying it.
So,
I also have a second comment I just wanted to
make. Okay, let me just go back. Let me just address that, because it points to a question which I have and I don't have an answer to. Which is, on the one hand, from the text itself, and certainly the comments of Rabbi Gavi Shon, and I think the Meiri also, it's only Chizkiyahu's group from chapter 25 going forward. We didn't put them in the beginning. We said, these are also Shlomo's things that came from Chizkiyahu's group. On the other hand, the Gemara in Bava Basra that we saw in source number 6, says they did the whole thing. So I don't know where their role is. The Gemara thinks they did everything, but the text seems to think that they only did from chapter 25 and onward. So I'm not really sure. What was your second point?
The second point was the word atik is also ancient. And,
yeah.
And very old. And I was wondering whether or not there's any relatable thing here to that second meaning of the word atik.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the meaning when they say himtinu, that they were patient with it. That's the idea. They aged it, so to speak.
Right.
That would be my understanding.
I mean, it seems to me that it took 200 years to figure out which of his mishalim were really worth preserving.
Wow. Full-time
job.
That's
what I think.
Okay.
I mean, because when they look back at his life, he made so many mistakes.
He didn't make that many mistakes. He made some
mistakes. Wait, that his wife should turn his heart?
That's one.
He didn't train of the next generation. I mean, right after he dies, there's nobody to take over.
No, that's not true. Rechavim takes over. Rechavim takes over. I'm sorry, but I don't think success in raising your children properly has anything to do with how smart you are. I see a lot of people agree with me on that one. Okay, Gita, you're muted.
We are translating, or you are, that Imtino is patient.
Yeah.
Okay. My impression was that if you're a judge, it's not patience you need as much as what I say is matun. It should be, I don't know the English word, it should be softened, it should be kind.
So that's a good advice. I just don't think Pirkei Avos is giving that advice there. It's good solid advice. I don't read that as what Mitsunim Badin is.
Yeah, what's the big deal about being patient and judgment? Not to jump to conclusions?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big principle in halachic jurisprudence, is not to jump to conclusions.
And kindness is also.
Yes, it is. I just don't think that that's what the word matun means. Yeah, I agree with you. And there's a lot of halacha about that. I'm not diminishing the importance of it. I just don't think that that's what matunim badin means. That's all. So, other comments before we go further with this, because there's still a lot to see. Okay. So what do we do with chapter 30, sentence 1, talking about this wisdom as being wisdom that comes from God in one form or another? Chapter 30, sentence 1 tells us that this session is Divrei Agur ben Yakeh, the words of Agur bin Yakeh, son of Yakeh, Hamasa, the word Hamasa, I'm not even going to translate. No, it's a word that needs its own treatment. The word of the man to ETL, to Itiel and Ukal. I don't know what that means, right? Tinkers to ever is a chance. Like, what is this that they're doing here? Agur ben Yakeh, Itiel, Ukal, and then, of course, chapter 31, sentence 1, Divrei Lemuel Melech, the words of King Lemuel. I'm pausing there because the trop, the notes, pause there. Masa asher yisratu imo, which I'm going to hold off on translating right now. Who is Lemuel? Who is Agur ben Yakeh? Who are Itiel and Ukal? So again, we are within the camp right now that says that everything you're seeing in this book is traceable to God. So according to that view, and this is the classic view, Agur ben Yakeh is none other than Shlomo. And this is just another way to say Shlomo. How is it another way to say Shlomo? So Rashi quotes for you source number 10, the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, which says, Ushlomo shahir her levatel os min haTorah. Shlomo, who thought to cancel a letter of the Torah, meaning he thought to cancel the commandment for the king not to marry too many wives and so on. What does it say of him? Maksiv bo. Divrei Agur bin Yakeh. The words of Agur, son of Yakeh. This is a criticism of Shlomo. What do you mean? She'iger divrei Torah. He collected words of Torah. V'hi ki'an. And he vomited them. Lahaki is to vomit. So Shlomo vomited up his Torah. Nu'um hagever li'itiel. The message of the man to Itiel. What does that mean? Davar zeh shamar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem said, lo yarba lo nashim, he shall not increase his wives. Lo omar lo ele bishvil lo yasur levavo. God said it to him only so that his heart should not be led astray. Le'itiel, meaning, shamar, he said, iti kel. God is with me. He said, nah, God's going to take care of me. It's going to be okay. And then, va'ukal, he said, I will prevail. Like sarisim elokim v'nashim v'tuchal, by Yaakov and the Malach in the fight that he had. So, the Medrash here is saying that this name, Agur bin Yakeh, as well as Itiel and Ukal, these are all references to Shlomo. Wow, that's a very creative thing to do there. Rav Sadja Gaon, quoted in a footnote in the Da'at Mikra edition, offers other ways to read these names as being Shlomo, although he himself did not accept this as what he called Pshat. But he brought you an interesting possibility, which I gave you a number 11, rather than try to translate it word for word, in which case it's almost incomprehensible. I just digested it to a list. Agur is to collect. He collected all of this wisdom. Son of Yakeh, like the word vayakhel, to gather. His father gathered together the nation. His father, David, united the nation. Right? After Shaul, David gets everybody together. Itiel is the power of acquiring wisdom. Not Itiel, but rather, I mean, yes, Itiel, but E-T, with me, El, is the power of acquiring wisdom, like he gives you the pasuk in Tehillim as a basis, Eyalusi, my power. And then Ukal is also the power of acquiring wisdom, like Yecholet. So he offers you this as a way to read it, such that it's Shlomo. Ralbag also gets in on the game. Which is really funny, because just Ralbag and Sadja Gaon are the last people I would have expected to go along with this. But Ralbag, in number 12, I gave you a digest of it, he says again, Agur, he gathered all of the lessons, just like he's Kohelet, which is to gather. Bin Yakeh, son of Yakeh, he wanted to vomit out the bad wisdom he accumulated. Itiel and Ukal are actually people. These are his students, the sages he taught. Now, I didn't bring it on the sheet here. I didn't go this route. But it actually makes sense to say chapter 30 and 31 are in fact Jewish. Because, and Avigdor Horowitz goes through this, this section actually draws on verses that appear elsewhere in Tanakh. Chapter 30, with the Agur ben Yaqeh chapter, is linked to all sorts of verses that show up around Tanakh. Like, it makes sense to call it Jewish. We're going to see the other view below. But right now, understand that there are ways to read it, that these are actually Jewish writers, really Shlomo, in one form or another. And the same thing is true regarding Limuel in chapter 31, sentence 1. Traditionally taken to be Shlomo. So that, Rashi says in source number 13, Divrei Shlomo HaMelech, these are the words of King Solomon, Sha'amar Lamo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to whom God said, Lamo means to whom, to him. To whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, God said, Klomar Bishvil Sheheva Neged HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he was corrupted against, it should say against Hashem. Therefore, God gave him the rebuke that's found in chapter 31. Ralbag also says, it is Limuel, it is Shlomo, excuse me, he has his own read of it to make it so. Rabbi Moshe Kimchi, Radak's brother, also says that it is Shlomo. I gave you some of it. Actually, I gave you more of it here. Let me not race through it. Metunim Badin. The Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah in source number 14 suggests that Lemuel is Shlomo in a slightly different way. Just making a note for myself here. If you take a look at source number 14, I'm going to do my English translation because I see it's getting late. Why was Shlomo called Limuel? Rabbi Ishmael said, on the night Shlomo completed the work of the Beis Hamikdash, he married Batya, the daughter of Paro. You may recall, we had this whole discussion in Malachim about when he married her. It's difficult to say it was the night when they completed the Beis, but that's what this Medrash says. And the joyous celebration of the Beis Hamikdash and the celebration of Pharaoh's daughter were there simultaneously. And the joyous celebration of the daughter of Pharaoh was greater than the celebration of the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore he was called Lemuel, because he cast off the yoke of the reign of heaven, as if to say, Lama lo el. What is God for him? He was leaving God. Ralbag in number 15 offers it as well, to say that Limuel is a reference to Shlomo, Limuel Melech, and he gives you a way to read it. And then in number 16, I wanted to get to this in particular. I wrote here Ibn Ezra or Rabbi Moshe Kimchi. The reason I did that is because the explanation of Mishlei that is normally published under the name of Ibn Ezra has been discovered to actually be written by Radak's brother, Rabbi Moshe Kimchi, not Ibn Ezra. So I preserved both on here. But he takes the view that it is Shlomo, and it makes sense, because the beginning of the book is the rebuke of David to Shlomo. He talks about his father speaking. And the end of the book is Imo, his mother, rebuking him. He's got both of them rebuking him. And the Gemara clearly believes Lemuel is Shlomo. They have a whole discussion about Shlomo in this chapter. And so that's where we're going to end up pausing, realistically. I'm sorry that I used the word holy and I really ate up a lot of time with that one. But what we've accomplished today, I hope. Number one, we saw those added sources about Shlomo and the corruption that came with his wisdom. And number two, we saw the arguments for the wisdom of Mishlei being something that comes from God via Shlomo. We saw the claims that it's Shlomo in this book as well as elsewhere. We saw that Shlomo's wisdom is supposed to be divine and superlative. It is assembled by Chizkiah's men, at least the 25 ones, starting in chapter 25 to the end, if not the whole thing, the way the Gemara makes it sound. His group is either copying and transcribing, or alternatively, they are translating it. And the names of the sages in chapter 30 and chapter 31 could be explained as references to Shlomo as well. So what I want to do next time is go the other way and see the views that say, no, this is actually not a book of wisdom from God at all, and then see a possible third approach to it as well. Clear? Hopefully? I got one head shake, no. I got a bunch of head shakes, yes. All right, I'll take the yeses, and for the no, please email me, and I'll try to clarify anything I didn't clarify now. Thank you very much, everyone. Be well.
Thank you.